KQSS Miami.
And Al is currently talking with Tim, and so in moments he will come in here, and we will see what's going on with the City of Globe. I hope you caught his State of the City address earlier. It was really wonderful, and of course it's right on YouTube. You can see it and hear every bit of it. And so, Al, welcome. It was a lovely address. Thank you.
Thank you. You're able to see it online then?
Yes, absolutely. I saw it the day after you did it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so it was right there on YouTube and easy to find.
Good. And that's what I was going to kind of review, because I really didn't have anything to, if you're good with that, just review it a little bit of what I went over.
Anything you want. I've already, by the way, included it in our quarterly report for the FCC.
So, oh, did you?
Yeah, so all that information is there, but sure, we'd love to hear it.
Yeah, I'll just give some highlights on it. I do have an answer of your question on the Hill Street apartments that are going to open again. I think it's going to be in November, had a slight delay with people moving in probably in December, but the chart is out there. I have a chart that breaks down as to how much you make and what the cost would be for rent there. So there is a breakdown, and I think there's an amount at the upper end that you would have to pay the full market price, I guess, but I don't think...
But you could know, you? You know, sometimes these places are restricted to where if you have over a certain amount of income, you don't qualify to live there.
Yeah, there are five apartments that are market value that they can rent.
So five units at whatever the market value would be.
Yeah, the other ones are restricted to 55 and older.
And not only 55 and older, but income restrictions
Income restrictions,
well.
You bet. Yep.
Okay, but for those five units, it could be anybody?
I would think so, if they're market value.
Not even the 55 plus requirement?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, I guess so. The bottom line is, anybody interested? Those five units still available, do you think?
Don't know. I know they've been getting, they were there at the State of the City address,
I'll
and they had
were.
All the renderings up, and they said they've been getting a lot of calls.
I'll bet.
A lot of reservations to actually move in. And like I said, they'll be moving in probably in December, the opportunity to do that.
And what was it, like 168 units total or something like that?
No, there's only 64 units.
Only 64 units?
64 units
I'd be surprised if any of them are still available.
Yeah, and I still have people yesterday even calling for the number. I give them the number that's there to call to try and make reservations.
If you can, that's great. Now, of course, with that in mind, and you did touch about this somewhat in your address, but then the next opportunity will be what's going on where the Hollis Drive-In used to be.
Yeah, and that's the Marigold Village Marigold project. I have that right here. So we did approve their application for their Marigold pad, and with recommendations for planning and zoning to move forward. We're still waiting on their final design and all their permitting actually to be approved, and we're hoping that's done by the end of the year. But Monita Globe is an opportunity zone developer, and we've been working with them for over 3 years, our economic development, 2 to 3 years. And again, this is again to bridge this housing gap that we have in our community, and this would be so advantageous to our whole community.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the largest ones, I think, in the history of our city would be this development would be. Anyway, it's going to be built on 58 acres they have out there. And again, we know where it's at, the old drive in the Northeast Corridor is what we call it. And this will provide our community with 120 residential homes, 600 multifamily condominiums, 65,000 feet of commercial retail space, and it'll also have a 7-story hotel with 300 rooms and a conference event space, which we don't have in our community anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be nice to have a nice, large community event place to have different events.
Sure.
It'll also have a private chapel with a bell tower, and it'll provide housing for retired priests and clergymen as part of their giving back to the partnership and their nonprofit charity. So I guess any retired priest or clergyman that choose to live there, I understand, will live there at no cost in that one area. And that's for their nonprofit charity.
That's terrific.
You bet. And they've also dedicated about 30,000 square feet of land for the city of Globes, probably like a substation, fire substation for that area. Mm-hmm. Nothing that we would fill at this point, but something to look for the future, you know, as that area develops up there. You know, we're trying to again replace the water line all the way to the fairgrounds, which is going to increase. We want to put in sewer lines, because that's our development area. We don't have a lot of land really to develop, and that's an area that we can really look at for the future.
Well, I think the other thing about it that hadn't been mentioned is I bet you that will also bring broadband to that area, which right now has been dramatically lacking.
You bet it is. And we have a lot of issues, I guess, even this last couple of weeks. We've had a lot of issues with our Verizon services. Sparklight's had some issues today and yesterday with no service, no channels, and hopefully they get that resolved here pretty quick. I don't know if it's affected you or not, but it has in our area.
You know, I've been a Luddite these last couple days. But of course, there's also, in addition to that, there's TMCI, which provides fiber service. Not as much in Globe yet, but growing.
Uh-huh. Wow, good.
But yeah, Sparklight, that's as far as broadband, that's sort of the backbone of the community. I did not realize they were having issues.
Yeah, they have today for sure. We ourselves had no TV, no channels.
Okay, television, but how about broadband?
Broadband, I don't know. I did not use it.
Yeah.
But we've had horrible, really bad service in our phone service, Verizon. I have Verizon, and that's been going on for like 3 weeks now.
You know, I'll tell you, 5G is a joke, because there's three different systems they call 5G, and an area like Globe is never going to have high 5G because, you know, not population dense enough. And I think they have had, and it's not just Verizon, I think T-Mobile, all of them,
all of them had.
With this technology, mid-band and such is not working out the way they thought it would.
Yeah. Yeah, you buy these phones that are 5G, and you know, you say, we truly don't have true 5G in our area.
No, and we never will. But, you know, what's interesting about that, I was talking to a friend in downtown Chicago where they should have it, and this was a Verizon customer as well, who said, you know, I'm sitting here, the phone says it's 5G. He says, it doesn't act any better than 1G. I said, yeah, kind of like a Dixie cup and a string.
You bet.
But, yeah, that is a huge problem, but I would assume the carriers are going to do something about that.
Yeah, I would hope so. You know, I think it's got to get better somehow. And, you know, because we got to have it.
Our community
has to have
absolutely. And we've talked before, it would really be great if there were symmetrical broadband at a decent high speed. That would bring in business right there because, you know, not to denigrate Sparklight, but the upstream on that is not usable for any business.
Well, yeah. And we've discussed that with our, you know, having, well, not broadband, but having Wi-Fi available in our downtown area. Mm-hmm. That's on our strategic action plan that we talked about, to have making that available.
Public
Wi-Fi in the downtown area. You know, if you're outside, you know, anywhere downtown, you'd have that, which would be great.
And if you do that, of course, somebody's got to be the provider for that. It isn't just like, it's not going to operate out of thin air.
You bet.
John said I should give out the phone number in case we have a caller.
Good luck to us.
Yes, 888-876-5593. That's 888-ROLLYE. And hopefully we will have some calls.
Yeah, let's see. We never get one, but you know, I'd be willing to answer anything if they, or I can get them the answer if I can't answer.
And you know, it's interesting because I look at the downloads. A lot of people download this show after the fact, so it's
really
being heard.
Well,
but,
good.
But yes, hear yourself on it. Call now.
You bet. Well, I'll just briefly go over just some highlights. You know, as I started my speech, the state of the city, people that weren't there, you know, I kind of went back 8 years in 2016 where it all began, really. You know, it hasn't been that long, and really only 6 years, because the first 2 years were spent really entering into discussions and different things, and how we're going to move forward, how we're going to build a sustainable, strong base for our future of our city, you know, because that's where you got to start. You got to start at the base. You can't
Absolutely.
Start at the top. If you don't start have a strong base, it's going to crumble. And really, a byproduct of that is infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
We have a 100-year-old plus city, and we have to make sure that we take care of our infrastructure if we're going to talk about economic development and future growth. So, you know, I talked about my employment. You know, I worked 30 years with the city, in the last 8 to 10 years, really, what my employment were really tough as far as budget, because we were really in a point where we were having to cut our budget like 2% every year. And really, it wasn't any fault of any administration or city council. It was really we were trying to recover from the recession or the downfall of 2008. And that really played a big role in how our city operated for about 8 years, you know, after that. And so those were difficult times. We went through times where they had furloughs. We had 10-hour furloughs a week. Fire and police did too. So we were short personnel because of trying to save jobs. We didn't want anybody laid off, so we decided that we would take furloughs and take 10 hours of pay a week away from us. You know, and over that decade, I know that going to different cities, I would go look at vehicles that we would use for our city. These are vehicles that were put in boneyards from other cities with over 100-120,000 miles. Police department was doing the same thing, but that's all we had. We didn't have a capital improvement program to actually replace vehicles or enough funding to do that. So it was a pretty tough time. And, you know, we had no population growth and we had aging infrastructure. So the first 2 years were really discussions on what we were going to do to move forward and how do we take advantage, really, when we talk about it and we see we have, 30,000 vehicles that pass through our community. Now, how do we take advantage of all that? And really, we wanted to become a lead role. And I think I've said this in my past presentations. We wanted to become a lead role and not sit in the back. You know, we really weren't a city that really invested in any marketing, $0 into any marketing or tourism. We kind of waited for everybody else to do that, other organizations. So we wanted to make sure that we were the ones that took that lead, you know. And it began really with a council, with a vision, with goals, setting some goals, and really setting a plan in place. You know, we reached out to other communities. I remember visiting another community, spending a week in different areas. To help us guide our plan to see what they were doing. You know, I went to Cottonwood, Jerome, Verde Valley, Prescott, different areas. What are you doing? You know, they were recovering after the recession of 2008, but what were they doing to make it happen? And that's where we got a lot of our information from. You know, we understand we only had so much revenue. I mean, we saw that for many years. And the only place, really, resources we have we can draw revenue from is our sales tax revenue, our state shared revenue, which is the population, and population hadn't grown in many, many decades. We have enterprise funds. Those are restricted funds that we can pay or purchase different things, water, sewer, different things like that. And then we got property tax. And really, we didn't want to raise property tax because we didn't want to put the full burden on our residents solely. And we collect about $500,000 a year on property tax anyway. And which it's quite a bit, but it's not a lot. So you don't get a lot from property tax. So these are the things that we had in discussion. And then also really truly addressing our aging infrastructure. So, you know, and I think I said this in my last ones, we had different types of meetings, community meetings, and we tried to identify priorities. Housing was obviously on top of the list. Quality of life, recreational opportunities, and education. So those are the things that we really would focus on, and we have been focusing on housing. I know it's taken a little more time than we thought, than we wished for. Recreational opportunities, we've really, you know, improved the recreation and trying different sites in our area to improve for our kids to go to, you know, the aquatic center, different things, the different parks. So these are things that we are looking at. But in 2018, that's when we really truly put our plan in place. So it's really been 6 years. We began, and when we did that, our relationship with RCAC, which is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and they operate in 13 Western states, and they provide technical training, technical support, financial resources, and advocacy so we can achieve our economic goals. So they were a key to us, and that's called Rural Community, I don't know what the A for is, and then corporation. And we received a $45,000 grant from BRE, Building Rural Economies, and that helped us pay for our economic full-time position that we established our department. And they helped us facilitate our first strategic action plans, and then they trained our personnel to continue those. So they were big, they were key as we move forward. You know, I talked a little bit as our momentum was growing, then we were hit with COVID. Then we were hit with a fire, the Telegraph fire, and then the flooding. But I think even through those most difficult times, we really never lost our focus, because we very well could have and just put everything on the shelf and said, well, we're going to wait on it. But we really didn't. We wanted to continue our plan, and it was going in place. There were some funding that came because of COVID and because of the Telegraph fire. We had the rescue funding post-COVID. We have the infrastructure bill that was passed, which is huge, not only for our community, but for many rural communities throughout Arizona. And that made available millions of dollars for infrastructure upgrades. And then we had the Opportunity Zone designation, and this helped give tax cuts for investors to help with their housing needs in rural communities. So those things were really key, and those helped us move forward and continue our plan. So we worked hard. We hired a lobbyist again in Washington to help us also, national level. We just completed our second trip to Washington, and those are key. Because if they not only see what we're requesting, but they see our faces as we go into their personal mm-hmm. office and talk to them. In fact, I'm going this week up to Prescott. We got the Rural Transportation Conference, and that is we have to replace our Yuma Bridge right by El Ranchito. That bridge is built in 1939, and it has a sufficiency rating right now of 48.9, which mm. made ADOT drop it from a 25-ton bridge to 15 tons. Mm-mm-mm. And we have the underneath is deteriorating, so we keep an eye on it every year, but evaluation, we bring a team in to evaluate the understructure of it. So we're going to go up there. I'm going up there to present, and we were requesting $3.8 million to replace that bridge with the Arizona state appropriations that is available throughout. But we're competing with the big cities too. Mm-hmm. And you know, the big cities always have the big shows and get the big money, but we've been very successful. So, but because we've been active at it, and that's what it really takes, is to be active and do that. We've also continued our plan and making our city more attractive. And again, this is through code enforcement, encouraging upgrades to our businesses through painting and sign replacement, working with groups like Gila Proud and community cleanup events, not only to clean up our highway corridor, which people said, you know, always looks dirty, but now with the Allegiance builders that we contract with, they keep the corridor clean year-round. But we stressed on properties in our business districts, in our residential community, because those are people looking for places to stay, any place that might be available, and we need to clean those up also.
Mm-hmm.
You bet. And then we continued our efforts to take our city to, again, the next level, and that's by creating a development service team. You know, we created jobs. We started the base, and then we're building our team, so we're ready for the developers. We weren't ready 6 years ago. Now we have people in place now where we got building, fire, zoning. We have utilities. We have development service meetings with any new business that wants to come in. So we can work with them to try and get to reach their goal of opening a business in our community. So when we look at all that, you know, how do you judge it? You know, what's a metrics that you judge it by? And I said this in my State of the City, a lot of people, you know, a lot of questions after this were really surprised at these figures. So I'll read these figures, how we measure from 2016 to now. So in 2016, our total budget was $24.2 million. And this year, we just adopted a budget, $66.3 million, which is about a 173% increase. In 2016, our operational budget was $11.4 million. This year, our budget is $19.2 million. Again, another about a 68% increase. In 2016, our city sales tax revenue was $3.6 million. This year, our sales tax is projected at about $8.5 to $9 million, which is about a 134% increase. And in 2016, our bed tax revenue was $90,500. And this year, we're projecting our bed tax to be around $256,000, about 180% increase, somewhere in that neighborhood. We've also budgeted in our fiscal year 24-25, $14.4 million to upgrades in our water and sewer, $9.4 million in road maintenance and bridge construction. And then again, we have $19 million in this budget for capacity for possible grants and donations, because if we don't have that money in our budget, yeah, and we're awarded them, we cannot spend that money.
Right.
And some of these grants, not like the bridge money, is no match, but there's some of them that require city matches. So that's where we got to start as we continue to get these grants. That's part of a budget now. Do we have enough to match these grants? You know, sometimes there's a 10%, 20, 25, 30%. And that equates to a lot when you're talking about millions of dollars. So that's part of our projections as we move forward with it. The total amount of grants that we've received since 2016 in all departments is $127 million, which is an impressive number.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that is infrastructure, but this is also Homeland Security, fire, police brings in a lot of grants, different stuff like that, that money that we don't have to spend of residents through our budget to complete some of these projects.
Mm-hmm.
And now we do have now a capital improvement program where we can replace vehicles for fire, police, and public works. We have cars, police cars, that aren't breaking down on the way to calls, and now they can get there, which is great. You know, it's nice to drive. You know, it's about your employees. You know, you take care of your employees too, but you give them equipment that they're proud to drive, pride to drive to. Also,
right, it's morale, of course.
You bet. You know, we've come a long way, but we got a long ways to go still. We got some more stuff to do or to continue that sustainability. One of the other things I also discussed, and I want to push out there, and we're going to push, is we're updating our building and fire codes. We're operating under the 2003 fire code, and we're going to upgrade to the 2021 standards now. We really have to, because all the new developers that are coming into our community are operating off the 21 standards, and we're still back. So now we got to keep the 03 and the 21. So we're hoping this process will be completed somewhere around January 2025, and we're able to get those upgraded. You know, that's with the updated codes is the most efficient, effective method of creating safe environment that protect and improve our public health, safety, and the welfare of our economic history in our community. And that's what we're pushing. I know some people, they're a little worried about the fire code. I said, we've always had fire code. We've always had building code.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we've done a good job as far as
enforcing it,
you know, or people really, when they do modifications, especially in a commercial building, when you do modifications in a commercial building for public people go into, you need to make sure that you're following all fire and building code guidelines, because you could create a public safety hazard, not only for you, not only for the public, but I also look at it because I came from that from the fire service. Is you're creating a danger for the fire, also for the fire. We're depending on a 2-hour break wall, and somehow you breached the wall, and we don't know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And what are you doing then? You know, then we look at breach in the attics or crawl spaces, basements, and stuff like that. These are the things that concern us as we go into these buildings where sometimes we have zero visibility.
Well, there's so much, as you know, work done without permitting that you really don't know what you're facing, even when rules are in place.
You bet.
And that goes back to what you've talked about in the past, that process needs to be streamlined so people don't have as their first idea of, I'll just bypass it.
Yeah. Or, yeah, they try and skirt the system, and it's not that we're trying to be hard on it. Even code enforcement is a tough job. You know, I know when I began, Roberta Johnson was councilwoman then, and she really pushed to bring in code enforcement, and that's the first time that we did code enforcement, I think it was back in 17, maybe 18,
mm-hmm.
Early on. And, you know, people were really, and they still are, but I think code enforcement is a good thing, and I think we have a process now where we hired where you get a citation. Now we've hired a person in between from there and court. He's a prosecutor, but what he does, he works with the residents to resolve their violation before they even go to court. So we've even gone that step further to hire another person to try and resolve some of these issues.
No, that's good. And of course, in, like all rural communities, part of code enforcement is based on complaints. You don't know about things if somebody else hasn't said, hey, take a look at this.
Yep.
So there are some things not being addressed because you're just not yep. knowing. And the other thing, of course, is that when you're talking like downtown and businesses, in a downtown area, businesses are one another next to each other. Walls are almost adjoining or certainly close. And so if your neighbor there is a fire hazard, you're a fire hazard by virtue of that, and you would hope that other businesses would, you know, blow the whistle on anybody who's not.
You bet. Yeah, you're jeopardizing somebody that saved their life savings and invested everything they had, and then you're creating a fire hazard next to them. I mean, look at the Dominion 2005. You know, the motel that burned and burned the theater. You know, look at that fire. There's nothing you could do with it. We're lucky it was stopped before it got to United Jewelry, but you know that was a huge fire.
That was.
It was a huge fire. And it's devastating to a historic downtown, you know, area, and we're trying to preserve that. And that's another part of enforcement is, or compliance, is historic preservation. We have a historic downtown, so there's certain things that when you do things to the front of your building, you have to submit a permit and an application to the Historic Preservation Committee. Mm-hmm. They review it, look at the content, the paint, the structure, the design, and then they give a recommendation to council for final approval. But that's important. We got to maintain the integrity of our downtown area.
Oh, absolutely. And in so doing, it's got to be a streamlined process where somebody applying doesn't feel like it's going to be 6 months before I know what I'm doing.
You bet.
So it, you know, it's like cogs. One falls on another and so forth. But absolutely, I agree with that with the building standards especially.
Yeah, you bet. So some of the things we're looking in the forward to this next year, obviously our priority is building that new fire station. When we're up to $13, $14 million now. As we wait longer, the cost goes up. We obviously need a new ladder truck that's over 25 years old, and that's a $2.2 million project. Mm. And we've submitted a request for funding through FEMA. Mm-hmm. Through grants, and hopefully we're going to get some. Hopefully we're going to get some grants also for the new fire station to cut that cost down for us. Mm-hmm. We have the $3.5 million project, the Jess Hayes Sidewalk Project, that's going to go from Connie's Bridge all the way to the community center. And that's all state-appropriated money. That's nothing that we're going to be putting any of our money in. We also received a Safe Streets Grant and Roads Project. This is $158,000. So we're going to put in, it'll be start with a community meeting with ideas on our historic downtown. How do we make it safer for our walking traffic and our vehicle traffic? So this money is to put in a temporary and see how it works for 2 years. And then after that, that's where the big money comes in, where you make them permanent if it does work. We have a $254,000 community development block grant that we're getting in 25. And that money's going to go to our skate park in the community center area. That area needs some improvement. It's going to kind of tie into the Jess Hayes sidewalk project because those sidewalks will go up there too. But I think we really need to look at the, and this is a lot that we get a lot of complaints, you know, soccer fields and stuff like that where people are parking. And it's really kind of a mess up there, the park. And we need to come up with a solution up there to make it a little better.
And you will, you're also doing parking downtown.
Yep.
They're demolishing a building.
As soon as Silver King is in the works. Yeah. We were waiting on a $80,000 grant from, that's coming from, I can't remember what that one is. Yeah, that's coming from ADEQ.
Perfect.
And that's going to help us demolish it. We had to do engineering. We had to do environmental on it. We have to stabilize the wall where it's coming down because it's a common wall with a tire shop. So all that's coming. That'll be a downtown parking area with a small park in there too.
Good.
So that'll be in the next year. Obviously, the outdoor exercise equipment's going. That's a $100,000 project by BHP going to the community center.
Nice.
Downtown water stations, that's a $50,000 project by BHP.
Nice.
We also have replacement of downtown sidewalks, $200,000 project, and we received $200,000 for design only.
Okay.
I don't know what that cost is going to be, but we awarded $200,000 for a design because you know what our sidewalks, they're so uneven, there's bad places, and we just need to address all our sidewalks in our downtown area.
Well, it's tough because, of course, it's not level terrain. So, consequently, it takes quite a lot of design to make that level.
You bet. You bet it does. Another one was a $2.8 million award from, this came from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers 595 program, and this is a phase one plan to replace water lines from the fair all the way to the fairgrounds.
Good.
So that's, yeah, we have a lot of issues. We continue to bust lines out there. These lines are so old out there, and these areas are hard to get to, that we're going to just replace the whole, all the lines all the way out there.
Good, because that can dramatically affect water pressure for the end users.
You bet. And we got to think of the future, make sure we put the right size in.
Right.
You bet. We're awarded a WIFA grant, conservation grant, to replace all our water meters in the city of Globe. And this is a $3.1 million project. And we're going to put the latest technology where you can detect, if you have a leak, you can detect off your cell phone. It's all generated through your phone, so you don't have to wait 30 days that you lose water and you get a big water bill in the end. So you can see everything that's going on. These are top of the dollar meters, and they'll be starting to install them here in the next month or two. We also got we're looking forward to two new restaurants. All you know,
yes.
From the food truck to brick is Selena Smoke Street.
Yes, I'm really looking forward to that.
And Gila Hogs too.
Yeah. Now with Selena's, I said they've got their sign up and they've repainted their building. When is grand opening? Do you know?
You know, I'm estimating. They told me November, October. I'm hoping it's in October. They've done an amazing job in the upgrades there. I mean, putting the fake grass in the front. Fixed it up. And I think what they're working now is they're going to have an enclosed back area.
Uh-huh.
So it'll be an outdoor eating place also. So that's what they're waiting on. I think there's fencing that's going to go up and stuff like that.
Okay, so, and Hogs. Tell me about Hogs.
Yeah, Gila Hogs is going in by across from McSpadden Ford downtown by Honest Pedals. Well, you know the old Jammers building?
Yes.
Okay, the restaurant building right next to it. They're going to open there, but they're also opening the old Jammers. And that's going to be a sports bar.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so there'll be a sports bar in one building, and then they'll have the restaurant Gila Hogs on the other one, which is neat.
Good.
The Western Federal Bank, I don't know if you heard of that one, at 898 North Broad Street. They bought it from the Strattons.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, I did hear about that. And that's wonderful because that was another place that was sort of vacant and downtrodden and all that. And so that's great that they're moving there.
You bet.
Right now they're like next to Safeway.
Now, and they're going to shut down and move over there.
Right.
But that was in a floodplain, flood zone. So they've gone through all the crazy paperwork that goes with trying to, so they're going to elevate ground, they're going to do some different things. It'll be they had renderings at the State of the City, which is amazing what it's going to look like and what they're going to do to it. U-Haul is putting a three-story storage facility.
I've heard about that and I'm thrilled. I'm sure since it's U-Haul, it's going to be climate controlled.
I would think so. It's like the ones that you see right off the freeway going to the valley.
And see, that's something that Globe Miami has never had, is climate-controlled storage.
Yep.
We literally rent a house for storage. I
say
I've got the world's most expensive storage. When I when I include utilities to the rent, I'm paying $2,000 a month for storage in Globe. You know, this is ridiculous. Now, of course, we're working around it with other things, so by the time this comes out, we won't need it. But a lot of other people will need this.
Yep.
This is just monumental.
Yep. And yeah, they spent a lot of money just buying that property and the improvements they've done. But yeah, they've been approved for their for the construction of their three-story facility.
Oh, there. That'll just be a godsend for
you
people.
You bet. We approved some of the plans and to move forward with the expansion at Corvallis Regional Medical Center. Apparently, they completed the roundabout now, but now they're going to build a three-story medical office facility on site there.
Yep.
And then they're also going to start construction on their clinic, which is going to be right in front of Cal Ranch and Walmart right there.
Yeah, okay. Now, I've seen that sign now, as you have too, for like 2 years or more, a long time. And I said, wait a minute, in front of, are they going to take the parking? Where is it going to be exactly?
Well, they only own that one place. You know, if you look at the area that the pavement is bad, that's theirs, because Cal Ranch owns the rest of it, or did the rest of it. But yeah, I think it's going to be a small clinic. So it's not going to be a large clinic or whatever, but apparently there'll be parking and everything there also for it.
Now, will it be the kind of clinic like they have in Safford where it's like an emergency thing, a walk-in thing, like you got a problem, you just walk in and there's the nurse practitioner fixing you up?
Something like that. So it's going to be, but they've also had some issues going. They had to go through the FEMA process. That's in the floodplain, flood zone, and FEMA process takes so long to get through. So they've had a lot of issues with that, but they got through it now.
Well, it does, but you know, all that happened in North Carolina recently be instructive to anybody who thinks that they don't need flood insurance, because you know, they don't talk about that much on the news, but almost all those people are just SOL.
They're, it's
horrible. They are not insured for that.
Nope.
And so consequently, I think it's a good thing that, that people do all they can to make sure they've got flood insurance, because it can happen almost anywhere.
Exactly. And we say, well, it's not going to happen, the 10-year event or the 100-year event, but it's happening. It's happening now. We're seeing what's happening back there in North Carolina and different areas. They never thought they would get water that high into their places.
In the mountains? Of course not. Nobody expected that. So, and that's why they weren't insured.
Yep.
But here, we do have flood zones and things like that, and it's important to... most of the time, you can get that coverage. It may not be that affordable, but it's
expensive.
It's expensive, but on the other hand, losing everything is more expensive.
Yeah, you bet. Yeah, how do you recover? How do you rebuild? You bet. So those were kind of the highlights that I went through. That's what I wanted to do. I got some other stuff for my next month's report that, you know, I'd like to address. But I just wanted to review some of the state of the city. If people didn't see it, please go to the website and look at it. It was about 35 minutes long.
Yeah.
But if you have a question on what's going on, I try to cover as much as I could with it.
You know,
to make sure that people understood. And I continue to tell people, get informed, get involved. You know, understand what's going on. You know, it's happening still. You know, it's not a thing that's overnight. We still got some ways to go before we can actually, we're building that base so we can afford it, you know, and expand it to our kids, to our, you know, to different things that would benefit our communities.
Right. Eventually, education has to be tackled.
You bet.
But for now, everything else is going to be put in place. But yeah, down the road, you're going to have to do something.
And that's a tough one, you know. And I'll say it now. You know, I probably get in trouble for it, but I think it's time that we consolidate our coast schools.
Oh, I've said that since before I was here. You know, you don't need a football rivalry. You can still have a Globe versus Miami contest.
Yep.
But, when I've explained to other people how this is, they think I'm leaving a step out. That can't be right.
Yeah.
You know? Well, something, you know, you look at any of the real estate websites and you look and we're D schools, period. Yeah. I mean, they're no one in their right mind would send a kid to school here. Now, the good news in Arizona so far is that you can do online education, and it's probably better than any other state in the country. But not everybody has the wherewithal to supervise the kids and all that
kind of stuff. I think it's something that has to be and again, that wasn't back in 2017, one of the priorities of the community. It has to be addressed. How do we move forward to improve our educational system, our community? I know I listened to Richard Ramos and the new superintendent of Miami. I know he's doing a lot of amazing things to bring some of that new technology, that new ideas to the school system here. And that's what I think that's what we need, but we need it on all our schools to make sure that all our candidates take advantage of it.
Oh, absolutely. And as I say, when you've got, you know, each district has one elementary, one middle, and one high school, so to speak, why on earth wouldn't you consolidate that?
Yeah.
And I know 10 years ago, 11 years ago, there was that movement afoot, and then nothing came of it.
It's a tough topic to tackle.
Well, you look at the results,
yep.
And right now we don't have results, so there's going to have to be some out-of-the-box thinking. Same thing with, I don't know where we are, and it's not a Globe issue per se, but Gila Community College, you know, now they're not EAC, but what are they?
Yep.
And, you know, all of that,
yep.
Because theoretically that's a great resource if it is accredited in some way, because you can get your first 2 years of college basically free.
You bet, and it'd be a huge loss to our community if we lost that.
Yeah.
And I know they're moving forward, and they had I wasn't able to attend the public comment part of it on accreditation. I hope they continue to move forward with that, because we need it.
Oh, absolutely, and accreditation's key. And then the other thing, like we've got CVIT, which free of charge, you can learn a skill that will employ you the next day.
You bet. Yeah, you can college credits, you know, you get your, you know, in the fire service, you get fire one and two certification, EMT, you're 3 or 4 years ahead of somebody waiting until they get out of high school to get to that point.
Sure, and the welding that they have, and also
electrical.
There are many things that are just terrific, so the backbone of the public education just has to get on board.
You bet. I agree.
But for right now, they're bigger fish to fry at the moment.
Yep, you bet. That's one that'll be tackled in the future.
Yes.
I don't know when, but it needs to be.
It will be, I'm sure. But, yeah. You know, you certainly come a long way, just an incredibly long way, in part by what all the workers have done and all that, but also just by the vision of saying this is what we need to do. Mm-hmm. Because nothing was, like you say, tourism wasn't addressed, any of that marketing. It was like a foreign war. So you've done a great job with that.
Well, it's not me. It's our council, and I always say it's our employees, because they bought into our plan, our vision, and they're the ones that make it happen. And it is scary when you talk about all the money that really we're receiving and that we're responsible for and everything. It's scary, but that step needed to be taken.
Yeah. All right. You bet. Next time we talk, the election will be over.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Now we don't know if we'll have a result, but the election will be over.
Yeah, that's true.
But we will talk again.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Al.
Thank you.
So that's Al Gameros. And, of course, it'll be on KQSS.net in perpetuity if you want to hear it. And if you want to hear it broadcast on the radio, well, next Sunday on KJAA in the morning. Now, let me check for the dates of the next meeting, the November meeting, so you'll know. Okay. Oh, well, that's good. You know, today, of course, Columbus Day. Well, the next meeting is Veterans Day. So that is November 11th. And we will have Tim Humphrey on at 5:30 and Al Gameros on at 6. And until then, that's a wrap.